Small Business and Startup Stories DSM features conversations with small business owners who share both their victories and failures on their path to success. Small Business and Startup Stories DSM is produced by the Greater Des Moines Partnership. More tips and resources are available at dsmpartnership.com/smallbusiness. I'm your host, Mike Caldwell.
Nick Elches and Noah Lafredo, welcome to Startup Stories. Your website states the easiest way to start and grow trading services. What's a trading service and how long has this been around?
Yeah, thanks for having us. Just to give a little background about trading services, they're essentially online communities centered around stock trading education and mentorship. They kind of range anywhere from, you know, $30 a month, anywhere up to several hundred dollars a month. And it allows beginner traders to kind of subscribe to an expert trader and follow along with them in real time. So they can get, you know, daily live streams, video courses, trade alerts, all kinds of different educational content. And it just allows for a more engaging education for beginner traders.
So what kind of traders are we talking about? Stock trading? I assume we're talking about stocks and options and those kinds of things?
Yep, exactly. Yep. We want to really have a wide variety, stocks, options, futures, getting into crypto as well, provide all the different options for beginner traders to learn kind of whatever they're interested in.
So when you say that, these people, there's somebody there and teaching them. Who are those people that are doing the teaching? What kind of people are they?
Yeah.
They're usually experienced traders that have spent time learning and perfecting their strategies on their own and have taken kind of a full-time approach and career path towards trading. And so they use their trading service to as kind of their online business that they run, and they charge subscription monthly access for their services. And so they have a lot of experience working in the markets, working with new traders and kind of helping them guide them through the learning process as they get started.
So this sounds like this has been going on for a while before you guys got started in it. How long, do you know how long people have been doing these services?
Some of the earliest ones that we've found have been around for 10 years. But really, just in the last kind of 3 to 5 years is really when we've seen the majority of them kind of start emerging in this market.
So what's the story behind Trade Labs? How did you guys come up with this idea?
I guess a little bit of background. Nick and I have been friends for forever since we were really young. And as we left high school and got into college, we both kind of started taking trading a bit more seriously. I actually went to Iowa State first and then went to Iowa after that. And while I was there, I joined some investment clubs at the universities, and it just really piqued my interest. And I dove headfirst into trading and just loved everything about it. And as we kind of started taking trading more seriously, our friends and other peers just at college started kind of taking notice and talking to us about it. And they were interested in learning how we were doing it. So we actually started our own trading service, where we were charging like $20 a month for access to basically just a chat room, a group chat, where every day we would kind of share, you know, what trades we were taking, why we were taking them, and just kind of answering questions that people had. And through that process, it grew to, you know, up to 100 people. And it was just kind of a painful process dealing with payment collection and subscriber management and, you know, kicking someone out of the room or the chat room if they unsubscribed and all that kind of stuff, that back-end management work. So then we wanted to build software to automate all of that work. And we realized that there were a lot of other trading services out there that were way bigger than we were, and they still had the exact same issues that we had. So we just kind of started reaching out to these people, asking them, you know, if they had the same problems. Almost all of them did. So we shut down our trading service and kind of saw a bigger opportunity building a platform for all of the trading services to kind of help them operate smoother.
So was there not anything out there already? Were people just kind of hodgepodging their own set of tools together or just doing it manual? What were they doing before this?
Yep, pretty much a lot of hodgepodging and manual work on their end where they were using a payment processor like PayPal or something, setting it up on their website. And then when they received a payment, they would have to go manually email that person, get all of their information, add them to the group chat that Noah was talking about, and then manage all of that and track it within their own spreadsheet that they kind of kept track of and kept up to date on their own every day. And so you can imagine how much work that can be for a trader that's trying to teach somebody and trade and is getting new subscribers and people canceling every day. And so they have previously been doing it all manually. And that's really where we saw the biggest opportunity to help them save time and automate a lot of that work that they're spending a majority of their day doing.
How did I know a spreadsheet was going to come up this? It's so funny because I got into computer programming before the PC came out. And so I actually started school in 79 and started programming on an IBM 370 mainframe. And by the time I got out of school in 83, I was on a PC. And so I remember some of the very earliest spreadsheets, the VisiCalcs and the Lotus 1-2-3s and all that. And, you know, people created millions of tools. And I swear we are still unwrapping a bunch of those tools. And it's really common when I am as an angel investor, when I'm looking at pitch decks to see what's your competition that says spreadsheet, because it's the generic tool. It's the screwdriver and hammer of the world of automation. So that's really interesting. So you have talked a lot of the traders. I think you actually have customers now. What's the response been to what you've done?
Yeah, we've kind of gone through different phases of the business. Nick and I were running our service last year, and then towards the end of the year, kind of transitioned into this platform. And we didn't have our first paying customer until the beginning of April this year. But since then, it's been tons of positive feedback. It's actually been kind of hard for us to actually keep up with it. A lot of the traders that we reach out to, they're super interested in automating, but they're also interested in other features like live streaming and text alerts and these different things. So it's been really kind of a challenge for us to, you know, onboard new people that are wanting our services while still trying to build more features and, you know, bring them on and be able to handle their customer support issues and all that kind of stuff.
Welcome to running a software company.
Exactly.
That's what it's like.
Yeah,
but that's a good thing because you always get those extra requests. But you know, it's funny because the next question I wanted to ask you is about your target customer, because you've got this, I'm sure, a range of different trading services out there, from the very basic through the person that wants, you know, every possible automation you can get. So who do you target? What's that target customer really look like?
So specifically for the partner traders, the mentors that we're working with. We've really been able to identify some of these people that are doing a lot of the manual work with spreadsheets right now, just through our research within the industry. You can kind of see if they're using a payment provider like PayPal and they've got a group chat through Discord or like a private Twitter feed. The majority of those people don't have any type of automated software to connect those different platforms and services. And so that's where we've identified kind of our target customer for the partners and just being able to automate their services. And then as Noah kind of mentioned before, we are moving through different stages or life cycles of our business. And as we are transitioning from the partners, we're starting to transition our focus onto more of the subscriber side of our market, the new traders that are looking for mentors. And so those people, we found a lot of success with actually younger college investors, kind of in the 20 to 30 year old range, that are looking for just supplemental income. People have interest in the markets, looking to like make this a career or something. And so we're really starting to focus more on those people and figuring out how we attract and market to that segment of our market.
So when you talk about marketing to the young trader, the new trader, are you connecting them with one of your current customers? Is that what's going on? Are you becoming a connection point?
Yeah. That's really kind of the long-term vision of Trade Labs. In this first stage for the last 6 months, We've been almost entirely focused on just automating the back-end work that it takes to run one of these services. And now we're starting to transition into being an actual marketplace where any new trader can get on our website and explore the different mentors that we have on our site and kind of find which one fits for them. And we can actually start being kind of that lead generation for the mentors and actually kind of handle both sides of the market.
Yeah. Interesting. How do the trade service people feel about that? Do they like the idea, or does it bother them? I mean, I kind of believe there's a little bit of both in there.
It's been interesting so far talking to them about it. Some are very against competition with other services, and then some of them are very, you know, for it and they want it. I think a big thing that we've noticed from the very beginning is we have a broader vision that I kind of just described of, you know, the marketplace to really connect all these different services. And I think we've kind of had to just hold steady on that vision and move forward, even with some mentors kind of being upset about it, because we know that long-term, if we can really bring them new traders all the time and kind of bring all these tools and resources together in one place, they're going to be far better off being on our platform, getting new subscribers through us than being separate.
You know, that makes a lot of sense to me, because you see the person that you don't buy once, is my guess. So if you're a young trader, new trader, whatever, you're probably not going to stay forever with the first person you pick. And in fact, you might pick on price point, and this is really common, right? You come out and you buy the really cheap tool. I was using the tool analogy earlier. And you buy the $7.99 toolkit down at Walmart. And I think it's Walmart, but they sell one. And then you break all the tools when you realize they're total junk. And then you go out and you buy a set of Craftsman or Snap-on or whatever that will last the rest of your life. And I can see the same thing as somebody that's just like, yeah, it's $20 a month, no problem. Then you get in there, it's like, I'm not getting anything for my $20 a month, but there's a guy or the gal is doing $100 a month, but man, am I learning a lot from her. She's a rock star. So I could see where they would want to be in there, even if they weren't the first choice. They might be the choice they stick with down the road.
Yeah, we've definitely seen a lot of subscribers kind of even subscribe to multiple mentors at the same time, whether they're teaching the same, you know, trading strategy or not. Some traders just like to have more eyes on the market and kind of more mentors kind of giving them advice and, you know, education. But like you said, I mean, we've definitely seen some people, they'll join for a couple months, get value out of it, maybe not. Then they'll move on to another person, see what they offer. And they really bounce around a lot. It's something we've seen a lot.
So I've heard a lot about people trading online via Robinhood and other platforms. Is that part of, you think, what's driving the interest?
Yeah, absolutely. The new mobile brokerages, zero commission trading, all of those drivers, even fractional shares, has been a big driver in new investors joining the market. Obviously, COVID as well and the stimulus plays into it. So there's just a wide variety of factors that are driving a lot of the growth that we've seen recently in this market.
So what you're telling me is there's a few people out there taking their extra check for the $600, dropping it into Robinhood. That'll anger a few taxpayers right there.
Exactly. You're exactly right.
So I think about what's going on, because, you know, this reminds me of when day trading took off the first time. I had a coworker that got into day trading. And after he lost, I don't know, 50 grand or something, he got pretty good at it. And he ended up doing it for a living. And I think what's kind of interesting is you're talking about fractional shares, because I was thinking about stocks like Tesla and Microsoft and, well, it's Apple, I guess, before they split. Before someone was split. So I can buy a piece of a share of a stock?
Yep. Yep. So actually, interestingly enough, what I did kind of in March during the crash is I went to Cash App, which is Square's kind of alternative of Venmo, but you can also buy stocks and cryptocurrency on it, as well as fractional shares. And so I was able to put $20 into 10 of like the top companies that I wanted to invest in. So Tesla, Zoom, Apple, Amazon, Google, all of the big ones that are normally like out of my reach as kind of like a college student with not a lot of money. I was able to put $200, really diversify my investments and holdings, and get in a lot of big companies that I really like enjoy watching, and that that was exciting for me to be able to see that grow over the last 3 months. And I've actually recommended that strategy to a lot of other college traders that are looking to get into investing but haven't, you know, ever purchased a stock. It's a great way to get started.
This, you know, so I'm an angel investor. My wife and I invest. And one of the big trends there that it's absolutely parallel to what you're talking about. It's not the same thing, but so parallel. Traditional angel investing, if I want to invest in your company, there's usually a minimum investment of $25,000 or $50,000. Now, legally, I still have to be an accredited investor, but it's like, I really don't want to make a bunch of $50,000 investments. What I'd really like to do is make a bunch of $2,000 investments or $5,000 investments and get into more startups and spread the market, right? And interestingly enough, a company called AngelList did the same thing for angel investing that you guys are doing with Trade Labs, where they built syndicates where a lead investor, in this case, you know, somebody really famous like Jason Calacanis or I don't know if Mark Cuban's on there, I don't think he is, but they can go out and say, let's say they want to invest in your company and you're raising a $2 million round. They can say, hey, give me a $750,000 allocation. I'll put $250,000 in myself and I'll put the other $500,000 out to my syndicate. And like with Calacanis, he's got 4,000 people in a syndicate, right? Sometimes there's a battle to get in on a deal, right? But the minimums can be as low as $2,000. So suddenly my $50,000 investment in one company becomes 25 investments. And again, you're spreading your risks. I just am struck by the parallel of that. So, and the company that is the back end of this is a company called Assure.co. You guys are kind of like, in my world, that's Assure is a really well-known name because they do the back end. They do all the, mostly the processing. They're not doing the front end, how you say yes and no, but they're doing all the heavy lifting in the back end. The parallels are just amazing. So I want to know more about your backgrounds. Nick, can you start? What's your background? You guys talk about being friends for a while, but tell me more about your background.
Yeah, definitely. So I guess it really starts in high school. Noah and I have always kind of had an entrepreneurial spirit. And so I guess our first venture, official venture together, was creating custom branded apparel that we sold online to like sports academies and some of our high school athletic teams. And so we kind of designed and sold those online, and we're solving some different inefficiencies with the payment collection and delivery process. So that was kind of our first venture into starting our own business. And then I actually started a website development and design company, and was doing that for a while, building websites for other companies. That led me to an internship with TMC Transportation, which is a national trucking company. And so I was on their development team building logistics applications with them and just learning a lot of software development. So I have 3 years experience with that, and then transitioned into college and was studying entrepreneur management and software development. And so I've really kind of focused on kind of combining finance, entrepreneurship, and software in a lot of different ways throughout my short experience or career here.
Well, I wouldn't call your career short. You've already done a lot. I mean, you may be young, but you've done a lot. So that's very cool.
Appreciate it.
Noah, what about you? What's your background?
Yeah, so started in similar places, obviously. Growing up, I've always just been super, super interested in tech. And it probably started playing video games as a kid and building my own computer and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, as we got into high school, we started those kind of different business ventures together. I actually went around one summer selling bread, dessert breads, door to door at people's houses. And I was just always looking for, you know, different ways to make money. My family had a really good pumpkin bread recipe. So I just kind of put two and two together and started selling bread door to door.
So did you bake the bread too, or did you outsource that to somebody else?
No, me and my friend spent pretty much every day after school baking bread. And then on the weekends, we'd go around selling it. And it actually gave me a really good experience with sales. And I think that's transitioned into, you know, Trade Labs. You get a ton of no's and a lot of people just slam the door in your face. So we got very comfortable with that and just kind of moving on to the next person and continuing. And then obviously, as I mentioned, we kind of transitioned into college. I got really interested in finance. I was actually going as a finance major, got really into the investment clubs and was just spending all my time doing that. And then, you know, we actually, our sophomore, freshman year of college, Nick and I started a note sharing website where University of Iowa students could collaborate on notes and share study guides and different things called the Note It All. And we actually had like over 1,000 students use that in the first semester. So we've had all kinds of different experience together, kind of doing marketing to different people and different sales and just trying to build kind of hype around different products and stuff like that. And I think we were always looking for like the business that we wanted to run together, but we didn't want to, you know, dive headfirst into a business that we didn't think could actually have the legs to last. And then we just kind of stumbled onto to Trade Labs and really learned about the problems running these services. And we just kind of, you know, had the discussion between ourselves and decided this is the one. I think there's a big opportunity here. And we just kind of went all in on it.
Yeah. Well, you know, you guys are smart about what you did. I don't know if you thought it through this way, but I think so many people start their first startup thinking they got to do it all right then. They got to go all the way and all the way in. And, you know, I'll use the sports analogy. I don't know anybody who can go out and make a 3-point shot first time they pick up a basketball. You know, if they do, it's luck, right? They can't do it 5 times in a row, that's for sure. And there's a lot to be said for practicing being an entrepreneur and just going and doing it. It's one of those things. In fact, this came up in a conversation earlier today. A good friend who ran an incubator, a tech incubator, got so tired of listening to everybody talk about what they're going to do that he finally had t-shirts made and passed them out and said, shut up and build it. Just go build something. You know, and it's not an insult. It's just like, it's time to build. And if it doesn't work, then you go build something else. And it's interesting for me coming from a tech company where we did build a lot of stuff that didn't work. I mean, believe me, we went in knowing stuff wouldn't work. Some wouldn't work, some would. You get comfortable with that. And a lot of people have never gotten comfortable with failure. And so to me, what you've done is gotten comfortable with, I don't mean utter failure, but I'm just like, okay, that didn't work. It's like you're saying, Noah, that somebody just says no to you. It's like, wow, 10 people in a row said no to that. I guess I better change the way I pitch this thing because it's not working.
Yeah. Exactly.
So tell me a little bit about developing the product. What kinds of, it sounds like, Nick, are you the lead programmer? Are you both programmers? How's that work out?
Yep. So I have software development experience, like I mentioned, but I mainly just oversee the development team at this point. We have hired some really talented developers actually from around the world and work with them remotely. So it's been a great experience kind of going from development to product management to just general management of like other employees and team members. So that has been a great experience for me. And the product has really been kind of a collaboration of the whole team. Noah is our designer. So he does a lot of the front end designs and stuff and has done really great with that. And we have a couple of different developers that specialize in their own areas. And so everybody kind of works on their specific specialty and then we bring it all together and it's worked out pretty well so far.
From the very beginning, like I mentioned, we've really been driven by our customers. They've been telling us since day one exactly what features they want to see next. So it's been pretty easy in that regard. The hardest part is actually balancing the different priorities because you got 10 people saying, I want these different features. And now you got to choose which ones to build first. And I think that's really probably been the hardest part of it so far, but it's very customer driven.
Or at some point you end up having to say no to somebody.
Yeah.
Because like that, you're the only one that wants that feature. I've run into that before. So
yeah,
you got to get a consensus that it's a good idea to do. So yeah, exactly. So what kind of challenges did you face in building the product out? I mean, Nick, it sounds like you had to build out a team. Probably didn't go exactly like you planned the first time, but I'm curious, what kind of challenges did you face?
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned, you know, building things that you know aren't going to work or don't work the first time. And that's definitely something that we ran into. And I was actually listening to a previous podcast you've done with the rocket launch team. And they were kind of talking about how, you know, you're building a product that, you know, you may love, and it may be your idea on this is what I want to build, this is what it should be. And that's really kind of the mistake we made at first, is like we were building it for ourselves and other friends that kind of wanted to talk to each other and share ideas. And so we really modeled it off of Twitter and added a paid feed to it. And so it really was a social network, and we were running into the issue of the chicken and the egg. Who do we get first, the mentors or the subscribers? And there were just a lot of different issues that we found with that initial product that we launched. And I think it's a great example of being able to fail and learn from your mistakes. As soon as we launched that and realized, okay, this may solve what we think these people need, but it's not actually what they need. And so we got really customer focused, started talking directly with them. And then once we started doing that, the product started coming together. Because your customers, if they have a problem, they're going to be very vocal about it and tell you what they need. Mm-hmm. So as soon as you start solving that direct problem, they're kind of just going to pull it out of you. And so we really had to make a pivot from the initial product we built. And once we've done that, we've seen a lot of success now. Still continuing to fail. And I think that's one of our greatest actually like skill sets so far, is just being able to fail and adapt very quickly to it.
It's something that I've been known to, I don't think I invented this line, but I love the line of, there's no letter I in the word entrepreneur. In other words, what I think doesn't matter. And I know when I meet with entrepreneurs, a lot of first-time entrepreneurs, that you get a lot of that, I think. And I'll say, well, what does your customer think? Well, I haven't talked to him yet. It's like, okay, great. Time to talk to a customer before you do anything, talk to the customer. So Noah, you're doing design, and it sounds like you're doing a lot of sales work. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, obviously in a startup, everyone kind of wears a lot of hats, but I do a lot of the product design, just in terms of, you know, building the mock-ups to let our engineers work on them, a lot of the sales, and then really my biggest job, mainly because we've seen a lot of growth, is customer support and success, just because we not only assist like the mentors with running their service, but when their subscribers have issues, we help them there as well. And in the last month, we've really grown tremendously. So like most of my day now is spent, you know, dealing with customers, helping them get set up. We're kind of in the middle of converting a few mentors over to the platform. So really kind of working alongside them each day, getting that conversion happening. That's really my biggest focus, but definitely a lot of hats.
So what kind of regulatory issues do you have to deal with? I mean, you're in the middle of the stock market. Do you have to deal with anything?
Initially, when we first kind of started on this path and venture, we had a lot of questions about regulatory compliance and issues and that stuff. And that's something that we had to address basically immediately, because our mentors, they aren't financially licensed or registered. And so the education and information that they provide is not recommendation or advice to buy or sell securities. We had to work with our attorneys to set up those legal documents and make sure that we were under compliance with the SEC and FINRA regulations. And so we've gotten past that point. We feel pretty confident with the legal compliance that we have. And we do provide some of that regulatory help for our partners as well, if they aren't providing those disclaimers and the legal wording that they need to, then we also do that through our platform as well.
Nice. So you could actually be, you're adding the value, not just with the platform, but with some of the back end stuff of what do you need to be doing to stay legally safe, that type of thing.
Yeah. And it even extends beyond financial regulations. It gets into, you know, tax reporting and accounting and all that sort of thing. Because a lot of these trading mentors, they start out as independent traders. They create one of these trading services, and now they're a business owner, and they don't necessarily know all the things that it takes to report that income and do different things and even write off
like quarterly payments.
Yeah. Even write off expenses like Trade Labs. And so we definitely have a lot of value added there, helping them kind of understand that they're a business owner now. And, you know, we can automate a lot of that work.
So did you guys have, or do you have advisors or board members that have experience in this space? How do you, because there's a lot of stuff to learn all at once.
Yeah. We've definitely made it a focus from the beginning to try to, you know, find the people we need to talk to. Like Nick mentioned, obviously in the beginning with legal compliance, it was attorneys and people just familiar with financial regulations. But as we've moved out of that and we're getting into, you know, the growth stage of the business, we've really tried to find people that have experience with our market. So over the last couple of weeks, we've been talking with some founders of other platforms in this space, as well as an investor in Robinhood who has a very clear understanding of, you know, how this growth works and how this market works. And they've been tremendous. They've been really valuable for us to kind of help us understand what weaknesses we may have and what we're kind of missing or being naive about that may be a bigger problem in the future. And they've been a tremendous help. We don't necessarily have a formal board yet, but we're absolutely looking to add those types of advisors onto the board to help us kind of continue navigating this space.
Well, that's really wise that you did that. So you guys have obviously gained market traction really quickly. What were your marketing channels and tactics? I mean, not at a deep level, but just at a high level. How did you do it? I mean, how did you find these customers? Because it's not easy to find, just go out and find 1,000 customers or 100 or whatever to talk to, potential customers, obviously. Talk to, what kind of tactics did you use?
Yeah, we've been lucky from the beginning. Actually, before we even had a trading service, we were very ingrained on Twitter with, there's a whole community of traders on Twitter, hundreds of thousands of traders. And we were kind of ingrained in that from the beginning just because of our own interest in trading. And that's actually how we started discovering that there were other trading services out there, because they were marketing their services on Twitter and other platforms like Instagram and those sort of things.
Okay.
So once we started building this platform and needed to go talk to those customers, it's been a lot of just, you know, cold outreach, emails, direct messages on Twitter, calls when we can, just finding these accounts on Twitter that have trading services and that post about trading regularly. And like I said kind of earlier, I mean, as soon as we get in contact with them and really explain what we're trying to help them with and, you know, let them focus more on trading rather than the back-end administrative work that they're dealing with, they're usually pretty interested right away. So it's really just been a numbers game trying to get on the phone with as many of these traders as possible. But it's almost exclusively come from Twitter in these beginning stages. That community is huge and it's growing quickly still. And we've, you know, just kind of recently started branching out into other platforms. Instagram and Facebook has a ton of traders on there as well. And as well as just across the internet, if you do Google searches for these services, you can find them as well. So it started out as direct outreach mostly. And now we're finally kind of building a brand, being that place for new traders to go to find educational resources and mentors. And as soon as we've, you know, got that brand kind of established, we've actually had mentors coming and reaching out to us now and, you know, seeking our help. So it's been a mixture of both.
So you're getting ready to raise a round of capital. What's that process been like for you so far?
It's been interesting. We've been very lucky again that actually one of our partners is an analyst with a VC firm in Des Moines. And he's been a big help just kind of guiding us in this process, setting up some of the meetings and giving us advice on what they're looking for. And then through that, we've had conversations with that firm actually for the last year. And so we've been in the middle of talking with investors, not particularly raising a round, but just talking with investors for quite some time now. And that's really made it actually easy to get this process of raising a round started. We already had that connection and made some connections with other VCs and angels within the finance space. And once the ball kind of gets rolling and one person kind of likes what you're doing, it's pretty easy to find other connections to talk to. And so we've been fortunate to have other people connect us with other investors. And it's just been exciting being able to share our business with them, share our traction and growth updates. The ones that we've kind of been in contact with for a long time, even since we were pre-revenue, having some of those conversations recently, giving them progress updates has been a cool experience. Just having them also watch our progress over the last year and kind of where we started and where we are now.
I'm not sure if you planned it that way, but that's exactly the strategy that a lot of us recommend to people is start talking to the investors long before you ever want to raise money, because you want to build a relationship. And to your point, you're trying to show progress, but you're also, they're smart. These are a lot of smart people. You can ask them questions, they'll answer them, because their job is to find great investments, whether it's for themselves or for their limited partners. And they're out there looking at the market as well and saying, where do I want to deploy my capital? They're also looking at who do I get along with, who do I like talking to, who responds to my questions, and you know, at least listens to my advice. Maybe doesn't take it, but at least listens to it. And so that's a big deal. So you guys are very wise to have made that decision early on. So, well, hey guys, we're running out of time here. Nick, Noah, I just want to say thank you for joining. This has been truly a lot of fun, and it's been very impressive. Good luck to you guys as you move forward.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thanks for having us on.
Yeah, it's been great.
Thanks for listening to the Small Business and Startup Stories DSM podcast. Inspired by these stories, we offer a hub full of resources needed for any small business owner to grow and succeed in Greater Des Moines, Iowa at dsmpartnership.com/smallbusiness. Thanks for listening.